Hey, Roberto, you ready to talk House of Cards again?
Buttons. Buttons.
Wait a minute.
Buttons. This is a seriously hidden joke, and I want to.
Okay. All right. I was going to
go into it. So
I was going to say, did we watch the right episode? Because we're
We watched the right episode. This is actually a meta joke and something I wanted to make sure I talked about at the top of the show, because I know it's not in our planned doc, but it's something that I caught.
And to clarify for our audience, we are also covering Chapter 33, Season 3, Episode 7.
Or as I like to call it, the reveal that the creators of House of Cards are, in fact, indie gamers and love indie games to death.
Yeah, okay.
So let me go – before we go into talking about the whole Frank and Claire and last time we talked about the creators of that was during when they showed off right as the writer was coming in. Specifically, they showed off the game Monument Valley.
Right. That's what it was.
We speculated that maybe it was some type of tie-in. Maybe there's something else like that. I knew it was an indie game going in. Wasn't quite sure about any of the mechanics. However, this is how – I'm going to tell you how my episode worked out, how I watched this and lead it into this. This is, again, if you are already aware of what I'm talking about, you'll get it. But I'm trying to sum it up as quick as I can.
I have not played the game myself, but I have watched one of our friends play live.
So the game we're talking – so within the scene – within the episode, there's this weird sort of the thing that they use to signify the passage of time, which I thought was really kind of a cool storytelling device and a really cool kind of film device, that being the monks doing the whole colored sand thing. What was funny is that during the whole like chant thing, you'd hear them like humming and kind of being in calm. In the back of mine was this moment. Literally, I was replaying from the video game, The Stanley Parable, which I'm going to get to why that's important. This specific section called Button Heaven, where when you get there, it's like a whole bunch of buttons you can kind of click around. It's kind of a hidden Easter egg in the game filled with Easter eggs.
Oh, okay. I didn't.
So in my head, I was going button, like Button Heaven, apropos of nothing. And then comes a scene in the thing where it's like, there's only one time where the writer and Frank are just like, there's only one time you've ever been honest with me. And what are they playing out of apropos of nothing? Not even me watching the episode. Cause again, I've gone every episode one by one by one, not knowing what's coming down the pipeline.
Right.
They're playing Stanley Parable.
Mm-hmm.
Which okay. And I'm going to do this really quickly because it's such a funny game. It's a great game. If you've never played Stanley Parable, I fully 100% recommend it. If you're a video game fan, if you're a video game designer, if you like the idea of what it means to truly design a game and level design and how you guide a player and what that truly means and going against conventions, going with conventions. There's so many great jokes in that game. It's so many great like video gamey jokes. Like there's a one point in time where if you go against the narrator a lot of many times, he'll actually put you in the, all right, fine, let's give you the kind of game you want. And it'll have like leaderboards and kind
yes.
of bullshit things like that.
It's so surprising too when it first happens. You're so excited about it too.
But regardless of that, so that game comes up out of nothing. And last time we talked about this, we're like, yeah, maybe it was a tie-in. Like this game, I can fully say one never hit Amazon. It maybe hit the Amazon store of that. Obviously, didn't hit any Netflix store. Two, it just touched Steam. It was this indie game, very low cost, not low cost, but I think it was pretty relatively cost indie game. And it was very much an indie game that you had to be kind of a gamer and a video game almost designer, understand kind of how that works to really get a lot of the jokes. So it was so funny to see that in the game. It was like, because the thing is, I heard the English, narrator, and I see the game. I go, what are they? Wait, that's a Stanley Parable. They're playing a Stanley Parable in House of Cards. And I had to quite literally, because I had been doing the whole button chant in my head, just as a joke, I had to pause that moment and like, continue guffawing and laughing just because I couldn't handle the fact that I had been referencing on my own the whole Stanley Parable as a joke internally in my head to then see the joke become realized.
Really? So you waited before they played the game?
Oh, yeah. I was like I said, when the monks were there, I was doing the whole button and like just as a joke to myself because it's Button Heaven. And I was just like, it's just something that comes to my mind when I think of chanting for some reason now. And then it's like Stanley Parable. I go, well, crap, I have to pause this and continue laughing here because it was just the strange – it was the weirdest moment – this moment of surrealism where like me and the writers were like one-on-one in some weird, you know, union of minds that somehow we both gleamed at, yes, Stanley Parable. That's the game we want Frank to be playing at this moment in time, because Frank will like, and that means something to me because that might be also how the writer views things. Like maybe the writer after playing Monument Valley starts playing a bunch of indie, because again, it's just a weird,
right,
a weird moment, you know. And now that we're kind of there, I have to say, I think the writers of the show just love indie games. And
yeah, absolutely. It would make sense that they were working on writing these episodes around about the time that those were pretty popular on Steam.
Yeah. And it was so bizarre to see, as a second indie game coming into season three, like mm-hmm. first one being Monument Valley and then now Stanley Parable. It's just like, okay, that's a little too on the nose for both those, you know, indie darling titles. And for entirely different reasons on both of them, like one being a very mobile title, one being specifically a PC centric title or Mac centric title. And really there isn't, it's one of those, if it had been like another indie game, had been like Minecraft or something like that, maybe I would have thought differently. But because it was Stanley Parable and because, you know, the joke, like, so we just started again, like, yes, it was just like a very weird, like somebody somewhere saw this and that. I realize we're going a little bit longer on this, but I wanted to make sure I brought that up before, because
I that makes sense. And I'm actually very, very proud of myself that I didn't spoil it for you now, back when they during the Monument game, when that came, when we saw that, because I wanted to tell you about the other like references to
in the games. This episode is just Frank and Claire making up
And starting over again,
yes.
So that's their little tie there, but that's really kind of reaching.
So then I got to ask you this question, because before we kind of really go into the discussion, only because it's an interesting kind of narrative device. What did you think of the whole using the monks as our indication of time? Because when they introduce the monks and doing the whole sand thing, you know, Frank says, how long are they going to be here? About a month.
Right.
And so we know that this whole episode took place within a month of time.
And they make it very clear in the beginning with the opening scene. Claire obviously has a different hair color and they're getting their vows renewed. And so, and I think it even says, I didn't realize it till this time around, that it actually says at the bottom of the screen a month early or later. And then flash forward to them really not getting along. And like the only thing that they can discuss is the portrait or the UN agreement, a peacekeeping thing that they're trying to pass. But I don't know why they wanted it to be so clear that this took place over a month. What do you think?
Well, I think it's ultimately, I mean, the reason for that, because I dug about it, because normally in a show, to show like a passage of time, they'll do the whole, like, you know, a month before present day, you know, 2 days later, they'll do it clear. But I liked that they kind of have this sort of fuzzy timeline where we know time is progressing because we're periodically cutting back to the monks.
That was very nice. That was very refreshing.
I thought it was a very, very interesting way of doing it, because it was very visual. You saw at the beginning when they're starting out, you saw the progress of the sand
and
colors.
Pleasing to listen to, pleasing to look at. Mm-hmm. Everything. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's rare in shows, especially television. Usually in film, they'll sometimes do this, but definitely not in an episodic show. Like, even though House of Cards is definitely a higher tier episodic show, it's rare to do that in those kind of things and to do it right. But I like that they explain by introducing this really kind of almost would have been a throwaway kind of thing. Like, who are these guys? Oh, they're the monks. They're from Tibet. They're how long gonna be here? About a month? Okay. Like it made sense to introduce them and say how long they're gonna be there to the president of the United States. You know, that being Frank. But I liked how that became our indicator of time. That became the, here is point A, here is the end of that. We know because they said the month here, without having to illustrate it, without having to like say, like, you know, the exact date or 2 months later, just like they cut periodically back and you see the progress of the sand painting, so to speak. And I really actually dug that a lot thematically.
Well, one of the things that I my little points or things that got to me at the, with this show or this episode, at first I thought I liked it, at least last week or the weeks before when the America Works project came out, you know, that they were really kind of trying to parallel Frank and Claire with FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. And then this time it was really like, really kind of pushed in our face that, like, yeah. If you haven't caught it already, America Works is very much like the WPA from the New Deal, you know. So, you know, and then making the whole, you know, I don't know, it was like several minutes scene of him at the memorial, noticing that Eleanor's off on her own, and another, you know, and then he even, like, I caught that at that moment. I mean, because I knew about that memorial and I knew how Eleanor was there. And it represented that she had a lot of power in that administration. And she was really his eyes and ears, as they say, his feet. You know, she went out and met with the people and reported back to him. And so, you know, there's all of that I, you know, but then it's like, then Frank has to come and explain that, you know, and I was a little disappointed.
It was so like I talk about how I love the whole passage of time and that mechanic in the episode. It was so weird just how forceful they had to be with that, because to the point where they go to the monument, and don't get me wrong, there are some shots in when they're doing the whole FDR monument that are gorgeous shots and perfectly well composed and everything else. Like, I had to pause a couple times with the text on the monument, 'cause I never actually had been there yet in terms of DC, but there's some great shots that they did and great composition. That being said, it's just like they're just they put it on very much out there, like, oh, Eleanor's on the side here. Hey, look, she was the UN ambassador. Does that sound familiar? I'm just like,
right.
Really? Are you gonna? We don't necessarily need this thrown in our face, and you know, especially for this whole.
It felt dumbed down. It felt really
because it's just because ultimately this episode was very much a. Frank and Claire had a really, 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 really bad fight.
Yeah.
And now they have to really, 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 really make up or just become like everybody else. And that's the episode in a nutshell, is that they had a big fight. They go on their own to their own respective things. They still have tension, because that's what happens after you have a big fight and you still have to interact with the person.
Yep.
And then they make up, and in this case, they renew their vows and that kind of stuff, and then Frank becomes a little bit more honest with his ghostwriter, and like that's the episode, like that's at least when it comes to Frank and Claire. There's really, it's not because I'm trying to sum it up, because like, I mean, what do you think?
No, I agree. I don't think there's a whole lot more to say about the episode, really, other than the side story, which is Stamper, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But yeah, I think that it's really, this is just sort of a stepping stone to what's going to happen in the future, you know, or just to make progress through, you know. And again, this is one of those things where I think, I wonder what the experience you're having with the show, because you didn't binge watch it.
Like for me,
but
this feels like, I understand it's needed for story at times like that, but to me, this felt like the filler, like a really filler episode. Like if this were a episodic show thing, this would be like the, well, we have, you know, 10 more episodes to do in this season before we hit the finale, you know, before we hit the finale, or, well, we can't, you know, this felt like a filler episode. Like there are some interesting things, but a lot of the interesting things are things that could have been put in other episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they didn't drag it out. I will say this. I'm glad they didn't drag out the Frank and Claire fight. And I'm glad that they haven't. At least, you know, it's to the point where they're, you know, at the end, you know, she goes into his bed and it's like, oh, okay, cool. They're back to whatever status they were at the beginning. But like even the whole thing we're gonna talk about Nexus Stamper stuff, I was like, that could have been put, you know, to another episode. Like this just felt very much like, I get they had a big fight. I get they have to make up. I understand this is a needed episode in terms of storyline to get everything back to status quo. But couldn't that have been condensed somewhere shorter?
Well, let me ask you, do you think that they really they've made up? Do you think that they've forgiven each other for the words they said? you know, because I kind of think to a degree that maybe Frank has, because he did say to that ghost writer, Tom, I forgot his last name, that she really did make me, that she, without her, I wouldn't be the man that I am, and I wouldn't be in the White House.
I think
so. So, you know, in a way, the thing that pissed him off, in a way, the thing that made him upset with her was when she said, you know, I got you into the White House, you know, and, you know, so after he said, I got you into the UN, you know. So it seems like maybe they've forgiven, but what do you think? That, I'm sorry, I'm asking you.
No problem. I think they've forgiven each other as much as they're going to forgive each other. Like, as much as it matters between the two of them, I think they've made up. Is there still going to be animosity at times? You know, that's fine. But they've definitely, like, in terms of all of this, like, is as much as they're going to be this. Again, with this episode, it just felt like because of where the writers probably want to go with Frank and Claire, and they just don't want to, not because they don't want to deal with this, like, they have to address this. I get that as a storyline, as a story thread, you can't just leave that fight kind of hang without them forgiving each other. I get that. I just don't know if we need to take a full hour or 45 minutes on that kind of discussion.
I agree.
Granted, we do learn a little bit more of Frank's humanity. Do not get me wrong. We do. But a lot of those beats we've learned before in, like, very much shorter times. Like, we think, because he even mentions the whole, you know, breaking into the, you know, the college and stuff like that. Like, we learned a lot about Frank's character in about, like, a good 5-10 minute chunk. You can do that. You don't need to spend 45 minutes on, like,
right,
Frank and Claire, you know, being angry at each other in the idea of still having to deal with all the world politics. Like,
yeah,
it was weird. And it was we could have gone faster than this.
It definitely seemed like a very rushed sort of argument and a way to let's resolve this in one episode. And but it definitely did show the signs of a relationship that's gotten pretty desperate in trying to resolve their problems, because I don't know, at least in my life experience and, you know, viewing friends of mine's life experience and relationships, when the things start to go sour, you know, there's a lot of desperate measures that they take to, we're going to fix this. All we have to do is renew our vows. All I have to do is dye my hair back to the way it was when he fell in love with me. All of that stuff seems so blatant and so, you know, desperate that it just, I don't know. I just really.
Like I said, I'm.
I agree with you. I don't think it needed to be a 45 minute episode on that, just to get this point across.
Or if it's going to be something that they're going to make longer, then definitely don't make it a 45 minute episode. You know, have it be the B-line within, like, you know, 2 or 3 episodes. And that might have been more.
Exactly.
Impact,
exactly. You know, just like, over it, the course of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, it felt like, here is the filler episode we need. We need to get we've had this date here. We need to reset the state again to whatever it was, you know, because even Frank and Claire didn't have the most perfect of relationships. I mean, there's been infidelity throughout the whole damn thing,
right,
on both sides. So it's not like they've had this, like, perfect marriage, quote unquote. But they have to, as writers, to get on with talking about America Works, having, you know, Claire be more of a UN ambassador, you know, caring about the things that they tend to care about writing, that being a lot of the inner politics and stuff like that. You have to reset the state. I understand that. But if that's the case, then why bother having the fight in the first place? Is just so that you could have the political thing? Because you could have just made the idea of, like, you know, and on the plane that Frank supports what she said. Like, it could have been just that simple. Like, I wish you hadn't said it out loud, but I'll support you. Like, it could have, we could have had this entire episode never exist in this capacity, because ultimately all we learned is that Frank is mirroring FDR and his entire relationship, and he doesn't want to mirror every bit of FDR because Eleanor was also part of UN. That's the bit of history I learned, was that Eleanor Roosevelt was the ambassador to the UN from the U.S.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I kind of studied that. That was one of the things I did in college. Okay. But No. But that's not very well known. What's more well known is her actions.
Even that being said, I was like, that's okay. I see what you're doing, writers. You didn't have to do that.
They were like doing her. They were teaching us a little history lesson, yeah. You know. And I didn't need it, you know. So I thought it was silly. But you know what's not silly? Our sponsors.
Of course. So we're going to thank one of them, that being, of course, UK2.net. They cover all the bandwidth and hosting costs for every show here on the British Tech Network. They get with web addresses, help you build websites, and give you all the tools you need to manage the way your website handles traffic and downloads. They handle a lot of cool stuff and have shared hosting, you know, hosting types from shared hosting to virtual private servers, depending on what you kind of need. Of course, if we had our good friend Charlotte Henry, she'd be singing the praises, telling how they supported her during some crazy political thing. Maybe she wrote an article on this episode of House of Cards and really, really explained the parallels of Stanley Parable to the current British government. I don't know. You never know. Who knows? Maybe there's something hidden in that game I just don't quite know yet. But anyway, but of course, if you want to get yourself some good old hosting in the UK, head on over to www.britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors for a list of offer codes available to you. And we'd like to thank, of course, once again, the UK2.net for sponsoring everything here at the British Tech Network.
Great. Thank you so much, Roberto.
Now let's move on to the man with a kink. Beyond a kink, beyond a kink, that being our man Stamper.
Yeah, he's kind of losing it. I think
he lost it a long time ago, but it's now gotten bad.
There's not really a whole lot to say about this, but you know they keep giving us these little pieces of him and his progress through his physical therapy. But, you know, it's still the same story, still trying to get Gavin to get information, doing crazy abuse of his position.
He's doing some beautiful social engineering. And I loved how he even said, like, I had to do some effed up, you know, crap. Yeah. I love that he brought that in because, like, only because I know Gavin's a hacker and I know he'll do that kind of stuff. But at that moment, I actually believed him to say, like, I had to do some messed up. And honestly, even in terms of social engineering, in terms of black hackery, he did some messed up stuff. He did some messed up things like, I got AIDS. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah, right.
Jesus, so you just escalated this.
Oh, that's true. I hadn't thought of it that way. That
he did some
that he was talking about it in regards to what he had to do.
To get the info.
Lisa. Yeah, I was thinking of what he had to do in the office. You know, I mean,
the office doesn't matter. Who cares? He could care less about what the FBI thinks. He had to actually, like, fake that he had AIDS.
Yeah, right.
It's like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ. That's a level. there's a line that he just crossed to get the info, which, you know, props to him in terms of social engineering. I am not going to, you know, Gavin is a masterful hacker and a masterful manipulation of person. That being said, I believe him saying that he did not want to have to do that. Cause like, that's a level that just like, I am not even comfy doing that. But regardless of that, like it's funny because though we talked about the whole Frank and Claire thing, that was the whole episode. This is a far more interesting thread. Finding Rachel. This whole thread of this episode, even though it was such a minor thread of the episode, because it just was like, do you think Stamper just needs another type of thing to be addicted to? Like, because we've seen him kind of go down the spiral hole.
We've
seen him go down with, you know, with this. Like, does he just need some other thing? Like,
it's too bad he injured himself so he can't, like, get addicted to exercise or something that's something somewhat healthy.
You know? That's what I'm saying, because it's, like, it's bad. Because, like, what's funny is we talked about it earlier. I think we mentioned this last week, or if we didn't, we kind of briefly mentioned it, that the whole, you know, his physical trainer looks like Rachel.
Yes.
He ends up sleeping with her in this episode.
Of course.
And it's like, wow. And not only that, the creepy thing. The creepy thing, and this is what I think the creepiest of creepy things is that he's on the phone with Dunbar, you know, talking whatever, things, and he is watching a live traffic cam feed, live feed.
He's full on stalker.
This is
mode.
Wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You really need to check yourself when you are that obsessed with someone that, yeah.
Like, there is so, again, like I jokingly say it's beyond a kink because it is. It is in some weird territory that I didn't quite know where we're going to get with Stamper. I mean, I knew we were going to get rock bottom. I figured we'd already gotten to rock bottom. Turns out I was wrong. We still got, there's still a couple layers of, you know, we're Dante, and we still got at least two or three layers to go until we finally hit that last level of hell, because I'm waiting to see how deep this goes and like where do we bottom out, because if this is like, if he's already at a point where he's just like telling Gavin like straight out lies of like, the deal was you got to find her exact position and this sort of thing. And it's like, you're not going to give Gavin anything. You don't even have the power to give him what he thinks you can give him. And I'm like, Gavin's in such a weird situation because he just doesn't have a way out. He's just got to do this.
But, yeah. I mean, forget Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. He needs to go to some my girlfriend left me, or girlfriend.
The
woman I'm obsessed with is missing and I'm obsessed with finding her.
The thing is
anonymous meetings, support meetings.
The funny thing is with Stamper, it's, and maybe this is because I've been watching a lot of police procedurals as of late. I'm watching boredom.
Ouch.
I love criminal. I'm kidding. I said before, I'm a huge police procedural guy. Okay. But like this is almost like the alternate storyline of those episodes where you hear them talking about like, you know, an unsub or some type of, you know, a suspicious person. Like Stamper's that character right now in those shows. He's that creep guy that you're watching like what the hell is, you know, what the heck's he doing? Why, you know, what is he watching this feed for? Because like that is where he's ascending into, that he has this sort of personality in front. They talk to Dunbar's like, yeah, do this, totally go with this. Yeah, push here. And he's like, what happened? I just saw something on the television. It's just no big deal.
Yeah.
And he's like,
I'll get you something.
Yeah.
Goodbye. I got to go.
Live feed of this girl. And it's like, are you, it's getting very, very dangerous. Like I'm scared for Stamper because I'm wondering, like I said, if we haven't hit rock bottom yet and it hasn't been revealed yet, like it's getting to the point where it's got to come out, right? Like all of it's going to come to a head, right?
Or do you want me to tell you?
Maybe not, but
well,
like,
I mean, okay, just keep in mind, as you know, you've been through two seasons of the show. Some things seem to get resolved to a point, and then we move into the next season, and we realize, has this ever really been resolved? One such thing is, you know, you and I talked about one of our favorite episodes, I think it was last season, was the Freddy barbecue episode.
Yeah.
How Freddy just fell apart because of Frank and his relationship with Frank. And now we see that Freddy has some kind of role in this season. And I think that we were both kind of happy about that because he adds a different layer or different cultural group that you don't see in the show that definitely is influenced by Washington.
Well, because ultimately he is going to be a hopeful, successful America Works person, which is sounding like the case. That was also a really kind of cool thing of the you know, as part of the C line of stories, which, you know, it's a main thread of the whole season. The America Works is actually being very successful. You know, it's getting jobs, you know, to the point where they're going to meet the press and talking about like, you know what? I never really liked Frank. Frank's a complete a-hole at times, but people are working. The plan is working. And it's like, it's very kind of crazy how weirdly effective this has been in terms of hiring people, getting people jobs and getting people on Frank's side, the public on Frank's side. It's very weird how well it's worked out as a thing.
Yeah. Well, we're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you quickly, since we're about halfway through, what are your thoughts on this season so far? Do you, in comparison to the first season and the second, which of the three so far have been your favorite, or do you think that the third compares to this first or second?
Man, I'm going to say so far, I think season two has been my favorite.
Okay.
Season three so far hasn't necessarily been weak, but it's been weaker in comparison. And I think it's because
of episodes like this one, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of filler episodes. There's a lot of episodes that I understand in terms of story arc that you have to do this in terms of things and say like, here's this execution, here's this, that. And I get that they get a little bit of a different advantage than, let's say, a traditional TV show.
Right.
Like if I were I could right now binge watch it all and watch it as if, you know, in like a couple stints and do that, which is totally fine.
I wish you would. I really wish you would.
But the thing is that, you know, if I think about how a traditional television show works out or any type of like narrative, when you have things split up into multiple parts, usually you have, you know, a overarching crescendo building up to some type of climax, and then it kind of all tailing down in that season finale. If you have a continuing storyline, like, you know, like, for example, Breaking Bad has that same kind of structure where it's your continuous storyline, and that, like, last season of Breaking Bad, but even like season 1, 2, and 3, they'd all have this arc that would build up to something and then kind of, you know, come down and, you know, ebb and flow. And that's what you're supposed to do with an arc, is a story arc for that.
Right. And do you see that? But you don't see that in this.
Not in this season. I've seen it other seasons, but not this season. This season, just like, I don't quite know what the end game is for this season, because there's so many things going on. There's not, beyond the Miracle Works working and beyond maybe Frank running for president. Like, yeah, those are inevitables, but like I don't see there. The only arc that I can kind of see, like I said, coming and crashing down is the whole Stamper line. But that's not even a front and center storyline. That's why I find it very strange, is that the only thing I can see as an arc that's going to, that can potentially come crashing down and causing a whole big stink is that one. There are not any other ones I see, because all the ones are just like, yeah, of course Frank's going to run. We all know Frank's going to run. Yeah, right. Of course there's going to be, you know, between him and Jackie some type of weird thing. Of course it's gonna happen, because that's how the canons work. Yes, Dunbar is gonna, you know, have, like, all these things are sort of will eventually come to a head, but that's sort of the inevitable of things like that. Usually with a good arc.
Don't see any kind of big story with, like, Remy or with the guy Craig, I guess he's now serving as, no, he's not chief of staff. Remy's chief of staff, he's press secretary. You don't see anything there, right? I mean, because what I think all we've seen so far is just they are supportive to other parts of the stories, the main parts of the stories.
Yeah, it's all the things that are supposed to be happening within the thread. Because even, like, we think season one had the whole Rachel, like, you know, realizing that she was part of this whole conspiracy cover up and getting to that sort of thing. Was it Rachel? No, Rachel, shoot. What's her? Zoe. Zoe Barnes, like, realizing she's part of some type of conspiracy, getting there, to a little shove. Season two, you know, the elimination of the original president and Frank coming into power, that kind of thing. Like, everything has been set up, and it just seems like there's no next hurdle for it to happen, which is what happens when you become president. Like I said before, it's sort of the top of the line.
Right.
Like, even if it were just the idea of, like, Frank getting unhinged and kind of going a little bit crazy. And yes, we do see those very brief moments of him losing it.
Yeah.
But that's about it. We don't see this sort of build up to anything. We just kind of reset that. Like I said, like, this episode is a real clear example, because the fight happened, and that's not even a thread that's going to go on for a few episodes. You know, that's just a thread that's just like, well, we're done now. And ultimately, for all intents and purposes of this, like, sure, there's probably lingering effects of, like, will she ever believe me? Well, that kind of thing. That's going to happen, much like anything else. Much like Zoe still kind of lingers in a bit in some form of fashion, just because of the way that is. Because, again, really, the only threads I can see, you know, potentially becoming problematic.
A Stamper.
And potentially the Ghost Rider, and only if the Ghost Rider digs too much.
Right.
Beyond that, there's nothing else. And even then, I don't see that happening. Like, even that, I don't really see truly happening, because it's just like, well, if it happens, it'd be like, oh, interesting twist. But it wouldn't be enough. Like, it would have to be like, oh, interesting twist, and we reveal that he killed, you know, that. I'm just like, well, if that gets revealed, that's the end of the season. That's the end of the series. There's no more show after this. And I know there's going to be a fourth season. Potentially, from what I understand, I think I already got greenlit pretty much after season 3. So I know there's going to be more. So unless the fourth season's in giant threat is like, and now the not only the impeachment of the president, but the entire, you know, arrest and incarceration of Frank, you know, Frank and, you know, in general, and Claire for technically maybe being a partner in crime or something. I don't know. Like I said, there's so many, like, of the things I thought would have been more problematic, everything of them have been resolved in one single episode.
And I definitely think that it's going to be extremely hard for the writers to stay close to the original British House of Cards at this point, after the end of this episode, this series. There's still ways that they can bring it back and tie it in, but I'm that's something like I would, I can't wait to talk to you about as we wrap all of this up at the end.
Yeah.
And you get, you know, you catch up with those episodes of the British House of Cards. I would suggest that you don't do that because you're not going ahead and you're not binging. Don't watch them now, but you know, I'll tell you when we get to that point, which episodes to kind of go into. And
that makes sense.
I don't know how they'll do it. I don't think they will at this point. So
like I said, if I have to say, not say this is bad still, I mean, it's a good show. I still watch it. But like out of all the seasons, this is so far seeming like the weakest because I can't figure out what the overarching thread is. And I think that's the important thing is that when you have this sort of multi, you know, season.
But buttons?
What's up?
I said, but buttons.
Buttons, yes. No, because when you have an overarching season of a show, even that season has, especially like a show like this, where you have, it's not episodic, but it's like this continuing, you know, building story. You know, like I say, Breaking Bad is a great example of that.
Yeah.
You still have an individual story thread for it. You know, like season one is the beginning of stuff like that in Breaking Bad. There's the Tuco storyline and stuff like that that affects the whole thing, or Gus and everything else. And that becomes, and that you know, in terms of Breaking Bad, that explodes in a certain way. I see some of that in like season one. I see that entirely in season one. I see that really in season two. I just don't see it here. And there's been a lot of episodes where it just, there's been these sort of very moments of things, but nothing's built up to a point except like, well, Frank will either bring peace to the Middle East or not. And it's just like, well, good luck. Like that's not even it's a beeline. And everything that's been really cool has been beeline. I think that's the real important thing. We're out of time.
Yep, we are. We are. I'll ask you that question again as we wrap up the season. So, all right. Well, thank you so much, Roberto. Where can people find your good work?
Oh, I'm easy to find. Just hit me up on Twitter at Vincent404. Check out my other shows at cosmicradio.tv.
And I'm very excited that, you know, every Thursday when I get it, or is it Wednesday nights? Wednesday
night, 7 p.m.
Yeah, I get it. Whenever I get a chance, I make sure to tune into diamondclub.tv to check out, my so-called 8-bit life. It's great. You are a great interviewer. I say that all the time, but I absolutely enjoy your, show. So people should check that out. So, and I'm Jackie Hearn. You can reach me at JackieHearn81 on Twitter. All right. Until next time. Bye. See you later. Bye, buttons.
Buttons.